the lies, mm-hmm. the surprising lies.
Or the strange lies.
Strange lies.
Okay.
This was another, you know, one of the books or the article which he wrote in answer to some of the Christians. Yes. And there are many other, you know, books which he had. He had, you know, a set of poetry which he wrote for Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salatu wasalam. On top of that, the major work which he has done, that was the tafsir of the Quran, Allah al-Rahman fi tafsir al-Quran.
Yes, this is
this was one of the books, which one of the exegeses of the Quran, and he talks about this. He says to one of his students that why did he wrote this, and he stated that in one of his letters that because the previous Shia ulama, mm-hmm. for example, those who wrote At-Tibyan or Majma' al-Bayan, they were more into the morphological aspect or the Arabic, they were more focusing on the Arabic grammar,
yes.
the aspects of the word, they're like, you know, why it is used, and that's how they try to do the exegesis. On the other hand, when you look at the tafsir of Bahrani, it was about, it brought some narrations without investigating those narrations, whether mm-hmm. they are authentic or not. So these were the, we can say, like critics that he had
yes.
on the exegesis before him.
Okay.
And therefore, he started to write a new exegesis where he could just write until the verse number 57 of chapter Nisa.
Nisa, that's
so
right.
he okay. was just, he could do first three chapters of the
okay.
Quran.
That's right. Okay, thank you very much.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah.
But Sheikh Rouhani, what is the main structure of Allah al-Rahman? I mean, fi tafsir al-Qur'an. Is it a kind of fiqhi look? What kind of look can we find in such a book?
Yes, in Allah al-Rahman, fi tafsir al-Qur'an, the late Allama Najafi, he mainly or mostly focused on mu'jaza or the miracle mm-hmm. of the Qur'an, because we believe that the Qur'an is the miracle of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So he tried to explain this being miracle, Qur'an as being the miracle of the Holy Prophet. For example, how can we prove that it is a miracle?
You yes.
know, miracle is something that can only be performed by the Holy, by the prophets.
Yes.
And the other people are not able to perform miracle. So he tries to, for example, explain that from the historical perspective, from the rational perspective, from the even the social and moral perspective, from all these different perspectives, if we look at the Quran, we see that the Quran is the most perfect, let's say, explanation or expressions of these kind of issues and principles. So that's why Quran actually brought to us the perfect version of lifestyle
yes.
or life principles of life, and methods of living or the best way of life. So that's why he mainly focused on this kind of issue in this tafsir. But of course, when it comes to the content of this very outstanding work of Allama Najafi, we see that he discussed many kind of subjects or topics like
yes.
intercession,
yes.
like, for example, Nabuwa, I mean, prophethood, like Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar, enjoining good and forbidding evil. And then, of course,
so we can say it's kind of topical exegesis.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Different kind of
okay.
topics
yes.
are dealt with by yes. By Shaykh in this mm-hmm. outstanding work. That's why in this tafsir, if you refer to it, you would find lots of things which are really important, significant for a Muslim to learn from the Holy Quran. And that's why this tafsir, though it was not completed by him
yes.
because he died, but in those parts of the tafsir that's now available is really important and significant.
That's right. And the topical exegesis of the Holy Quran might be very much interesting, Sayyid Mohsen, isn't it? For example, in contrast to the morphological, structural, or we can say surah by surah, the topical one might be very much of interest.
Yes, definitely. Obviously, when we have a sequential tafsir exegesis, obviously in that we start from the very first word of the Quran and we keep going on. And there are like different verses which are basically related to a specific topic. The topical exegesis is beneficial because, you know, sometimes we see people, they're investigating a specific topic, and it's very easy to read that topic and to know what Quran has said. For example, we look at the word monotheism. Mm-hmm. If it is a topical, then all the verses that are related to monotheism, its ways, how to define, and the proofs that are been brought. So all of that is discussed. For example, if it is about the prophecy, if it is about taqwa, if it is about the economics. So the topical exegesis is a specific, you can say, thing which has been discussed by providing all the verses that are in the Quran related to that topic. And obviously it helps us that to know about the a specific topic with different ways how Allah has basically described it,
okay.
Basically. And this is a good thing that the ulama, the fuqaha, or the those who were the interpreters of the Quran, they have come towards the topical exegesis rather than going towards the sequential. We have the sequential as well, but in the topical exegesis, another benefit is that you have the narrations next to them.
Yes.
You have the logical proofs, intellectual, you know, proofs beside the verses of the Quran.
That's right.
And once you get the logical or intellectual or the philosophical, maybe like you get the narrations on a specific topic, then obviously you have a full command on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the ways how ulama used to write the exegesis rather than going towards the full Quran. And also one of the best thing about this Allah al-Rahman was that he did not went towards the dry, we can say like...
strict materials.
Strict materials.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Rather, he used a mixture of different things. Like he brought the philosophical ideas into it. He talked about the grammar. He brought the narrations, and this was a combination of different things.
That's right.
And it keeps the interest of the reader, because, for example, if I'm not very much into the Arabic grammar, I don't want to know about the root words, how it came, why it has a fatha or dhamma, if it would have, you know, the movement has been changed, what would happen. I'm not interested into it. I just want to know what does this word say.
That's right.
So he slightly talks about that. Immediately he goes towards the intellectual proof, and then after that he brought the narrations beside it and tries to explain. So it's kind of more interesting thing. So he tried to make this tafsir or exegesis more interesting for the readers rather being only a scholarly, you know, material or look.
That's right. Thank you very much. Allah, we could say that Balaghi, an exegete of the Holy Quran, is the founder of new Kalami movement, or is better to say school of thought in the city of Najaf, because he was concerned with answering, can I say, the beliefs of other religions with the tafsir of the Holy Quran. Politically, he was very much active too. He was even called as Mujahid, we can say, because in the movement against the Britain's supremacy in Iraq, he was very much active beside ulama like Mirza Muhammad Taqi Shirazi and other scholars on that time, especially when he was in Samarra Islamic Seminary. All in all, we could find his works in 9 volumes in Mawsu' Allama Balaghi, Al-Allama Balaghi, which is the complete voluminous books and all the publications of this Allama published in the holy city of Qom. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Shaykh Rouhani for a nice elaboration regarding the life of Muhammad Jawad Balaghi Najafi. About his demise, it is mentioned that it was Sha'ban 22nd on the night of Monday, 1352, according to the Hijri lunar calendar in the city of Najaf. he passed away and his body was taken into the holy shrine of Imam Ali alayhi salam and was buried in one of the main courtyards over there. May Allah bless the soul of the late Allama Muhammad Jawad Balaghi, the author of Alau Rahman fi Tafsir al-Quran. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, and he was the ninth divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was brought up in the house of Nubuwa, Prophethood, and Imamat, a house by which Allah had honored the Muslims all across the world. And so Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam grew up in the shade of that honored and noble house, while he received high ideals, morals, values, knowledge, and wisdom from his father, the eighth divinely appointed Imam, who shed rays of light from his great soul unto Imam al-Jawad. Imam al-Jawad's father, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam, himself had undertaken the upbringing, the nurturing, the education of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. And so we find that Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam took Imam al-Jawad with him wherever he went and fed him with his own hands. A divinely appointed Imam, nurtured and educated by a divinely appointed Imam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, as we humbly speak about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, the ninth divinely appointed Imam, the Immaculate Imam, the son of Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam, we find that the dialogues of the Imam are truly very wonderful, and they are very profound, and they bring forth beautiful points as far as ethical and moral virtues. Now, of course, Islam emphasizes greatly on these moral and ethical virtues known as akhlaq in the Arabic and is also used in the Persian. These ethical and moral virtues are truly what beautify a human being. This way of life, this manner of living, how we should behave with ourselves and with one another. It is this that is a fundamental building block of humanity. In the present day, where we find that humanity has lost its humanity, it is these pieces of advice and these dialogues via which we learn how to live a true, pure, and beautiful life. We find that one of the things that is necessary in society is to advise one another. And of course, it is via this advising of one another that we become stronger, we make better decisions, and we can improve ourselves. In a conversation with one of his companions, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam says to his companion, when he asked His Eminence about how to give advice, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam said, "He who advises his brother secretly does him good. And he who advises him openly, publicly, does him wrong." So, dear friends, yes, advising one another is something that is necessary, as Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spoke about in this dialogue. Advising a brother or a friend secretly indicates sincerity and truthfulness. Now, of course, when you are one-on-one with a friend, with a relative, with a family member, and you advise them on a one-on-one level, then of course this keeps that advice between the two of you. But sometimes we don't realize and we end up giving this kind of advice or reprimanding or trying to explain to another individual something in a public setting. Now, in a public setting, what happens is that that individual that you are giving advice to or reprimanding might feel humiliated. They might feel embarrassed. And so when one advises openly, then they cause this humiliation or this shame to that individual. And here Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam says to his companion that he who advises the other openly and publicly does him wrong. And so we must always be careful that yes, it is advisable and it is necessary for us to advise and help and explain and teach one another certain things and even at times reprimand one another. But this should be done secretly and privately, and it should not be done openly, especially when it results in the humiliation and the shame and the embarrassment of another Muslim brother or sister. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
And now we invite you to listen to Shaykh Winay Keita about Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
Imam al-Jawad salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayhi is an interesting case study for many, many different subjects. Theology, justice, politics, many different things that we can learn. There are many different things that we can learn from his life. First of all, the imamate of the ninth imam was a major test for the Shia community. Not only because he was young, no. That is one reason, but there is another reason which is often not discussed. And it was not only a major test for the Muslim community, it was a major test also for the ashab of the imam and the family of the imam himself, the family of Imam Radha. Immediately after the birth of the imam and the announcement by Imam Radha during the life of Imam al-Jawad that he will succeed him, debates began. Debates began even before Imam Rida passed away. This has to be understood. So these debates and discussions and arguments were going on in the circle of Hashimiyin, of the Hashemites, before the death of Imam Rida himself. So right at, we would say, from beginning of the birth of Al-Jawad alayhi salam, and from the point at which Imam Rida designated this son to be the Imam. And we see a similar situation occurred with regards to the 12th Imam and his uncle and those among the family of Imam al-Askari who denied the imamate and the existence of his son Muhammad al-Muntadhar al-Qa'im min Ali Muhammad. But there is one important difference, and that in the case of the 9th Imam, there was very dirty politics at play. Very foul politics were going on. And that's why I always remind the brothers and the sisters that we really don't need the UN to remind us about the rights of human dignity. We don't need Black History Month or This Lives Matter or That Lives Matter to teach us about the dignity of human life. Often our youth, you know, naive, out of a sense of naivete and ignorance, you know, jump onto all kinds of different bandwagons, being ignorant, of course, of their own religion, of what the deen of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala teaches us about these things.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In Britain, nurses' union leader Pat Cullen has attacked the government over its failure to give Royal College of Nursing members a decent pay rise. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story, and it tells us more. The Royal College of Nursing has clashed with the government over whether sufficient exemptions have been made to protect patients' safety during the nurses' strike in England that started on Sunday evening, 30th of April. The clash came as a row erupted between the leader of the Train Drivers' Union and the Transport Secretary, who had criticised the planned strike on the eve of the Eurovision Song Contest final for its impact on Ukraine. The General Secretary of the Royal College of Nursing, Pat Cullen, said nurses had worked tirelessly to make sure their strike would be as safe as possible for patients and that there were national exemptions in place for those really acute urgent services. She took issue with the Transport Secretary, Mark Harper, who claimed that there were no nationally agreed derogations to stop the strike endangering patient lives. Pat Cullen told Sky News, "There are national exemptions in place for a range of services, for emergency departments, for intensive care units, for neonatal units, pediatric intensive care units, these really acute urgent services. We have put national exemptions in place. We have worked tirelessly with NHS England. A series of derogations have now been agreed to protect care in some areas, after Great Ormond Street Hospital was among organizations to voice serious concerns about patient safety during the strike. However, Britain's Transport Secretary Mark Harper said it clearly does put patients at risk, that there were no nationally agreed exemptions across the board. The Royal College of Nursing initially resisted derogations, but its website now says that although there will be no wide-ranging derogations, there are safety-critical mitigations allowing staff to preserve life and limb care in emergency department and intensive care units. The Royal College of Nursing will hold the industrial action from 8 p.m. on Sunday, 30th of April, until 11:59 p.m. on Monday, 1st of May, after members voted in a ballot to reject the latest government offer. The pay deal included a 5% pay rise for this year and a cash payment for last year. Steve Barclay, the health secretary, may now move to impose the pay deal as the bulk of the 12 unions involved in negotiations are ready to accept the government's offer, with the Royal College of Nursing and Unite both holding out. Transport Secretary Mark Harper urged the Royal College of Nursing to accept the pay offer for its members, even though it was rejected by the union's nurses when put to a ballot. "I would urge them to think again and to do what the other trade unions in the health service have done, which is to accept what I think is a fair and reasonable pay offer, reflecting the value that we do place on hard-working NHS staff," Steve Harper told the programme. The leader of the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, has said he did not want to see strikes go ahead, suggesting he would seek further negotiations with the Royal College of Nursing. "The way to avoid strikes is to get in the room with the nurses and resolve these issues," Starmer said. The strike was due to last 2 days, but a High Court judge ruled on Thursday it will be unlawful for the Royal College of Nursing strike to continue into Tuesday as originally planned, because its mandate for industrial action will have expired. Meanwhile, the disputes that led to train strikes had appeared close to a resolution in recent weeks, but RMT members are now due to strike again on 13th of May after the union rejected the latest pay deal from operators. The RMT union said the rail delivery group, which represents the train operators, had torpedoed pay talks. Transport Secretary Mark Harper said a fair and reasonable pay offer had been made and accused the RMT Transport Union of cynically targeting the Eurovision Song Contest by calling strikes on the day of the Eurovision Song Final. Mark Harper said on Sky News he would have thought rail workers would want to stand in solidarity with their counterparts in Ukraine, where the Eurovision Song Final was due to be hosted before it was switched to Liverpool because of the conflict in Ukraine. Mick Whelan, General Secretary of ASLEF, said Mark Harper's accusation was bizarre, implying that the union was not standing in solidarity with Ukraine. He said, "Of all the accusations I have heard, this really is the most ridiculous. He claims we are not standing in solidarity with Ukraine when he knows, or he should know, that we have stood in solidarity with the people of that country much longer than he has." NHS England has urged the public to use the health service wisely during the stoppage, but to still call 999 in an emergency. It said emergency and urgent care would remain the priority, with people asked to use other services such as pharmacies and 111 where possible. The Chief Nursing Officer for England, Ruth May, said positive discussions with the Royal College of Nursing this weekend had resulted in a number of national agreements to ensure staff are able to provide direct patient care needed to protect life and limb services, covering neonatal intensive care unit, paediatric intensive care unit, intensive care and emergency departments. BBC has also covered the same story and tells us more. Britain's Transport Secretary Mark Harper has accused the RMT Transport Union of cynically targeting the Eurovision Song Contest by calling strikes on the day of the Eurovision Song Final. RMT members are due to strike on Saturday, 13th of May, after the union rejected the latest pay deal from train operators. The RMT union said the Rail Delivery Group, RDG, which represents the train operators, had torpedoed the pay talks. But Transport Secretary Mark Harper said a fair and reasonable pay offer had been made. In an interview on Sunday with Laura Nussenberg, Mark Harper urged the RMT union, the UK's largest specialist transport union, to put the pay offer to its members and let them decide. Mark Harper said rather than doing this, the RMT union had called strikes which are cynically targeting the Eurovision Song Contest. The reason that's so appalling is because that's not our song contest, Mark Harper said. We are hosting it for Ukraine. Transport Secretary Mark Harper said the RMT union should be standing in solidarity with the people of Ukraine and with Ukrainian rail workers. The BBC asked the RMT union if it wished to comment, but the union said it had nothing to add beyond its previous statements. The RMT union said it would launch action across 14 train operators for 24 hours on Saturday, 13th of May, the day Liverpool hosts the Eurovision Song Final on behalf of Ukraine. The union's executive and the train operators have been discussing a new pay offer aimed at ending a long-running dispute. The Rail Delivery Group's proposals involve 1 year's pay rise of 5% that was dependent on the union agreeing to go into a dispute resolution process and accepting the general principle of changes to working practices. Earlier this week, RMT's General Secretary Mick Lynch said the Rail Delivery Group had reneged on their original proposals and torpedoed these negotiations. Train operators said they had been blindsided by the strike and denied union claims they had changed their offer. Steve Montgomery, chair of the Rail Delivery Group, said the union was negotiating in bad faith, again denying their members a say on a fair pay deal, needlessly disrupting the lives of millions of train passengers and undermining the viability of an industry critical to Britain's economy. The RMT union's decision to take industrial action followed an announcement of strikes by ASLEF, a union that represents train drivers. ASLEF has strikes on 12th and 31st of May and on 3rd of June, the day the FA Cup final at Wembley Stadium will be held in London. ASLEF rejected a fresh offer from 16 train firms, including a 4% pay rise for 2 years in a row, and changes to working conditions. Mick Whelan, ASLEF's general secretary, said the offer was risible and clearly not designed to be accepted as inflation is still running north of 10%. He said the only people responsible for the ongoing strikes in this country are the government and the employers.
This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, make the best use of life. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, may his peace and blessings be upon Muhammad and his pure, immaculate Ahl al-Bayt. Salamun alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to A to Z on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this session, we're going to understand how to make the best use of life. Because sometimes when we look at the old people who did nothing worthwhile in their life and wasted during their youth, the times in nonsensical and absurd things that did not provide them a good future, okay, we feel that we're not going to be like them. But the question is how we should start and where we can start from and what are the causes of failure. In this part, we are going to count them as we can. So, firstly, we should know that there are some factors. The very first factor of failure and causes of failure, okay, is the individual ones. Like leaving nervously, being busy with travel and unnecessary things, and also reading irregularly without organizing our time and works. Because in this case, when we leave irregularly without organizing our time, we feel depressed because in this case, we cannot achieve our goals. So we believe that we cannot do anything. And this belief will destroy everything in our life. Also, curiosity and interfering others' affairs stops us to make the best use of our life. And as well as having poor information about the necessary issues of life, I have told our brothers and sisters for many times that it's very important to put a regular time during our week, during our day, to study about necessary issues of our life through Quran, through hadiths, through other books. It's very important to know what to do and gain the necessary information. So it's time to start from today, from now, to put a regular time of studying. Studying is the main pillar, and gaining the necessary information is the main factor of being successful and make the best use of our life. Thank you. Welcome back there, brothers and sisters. We were talking about the factors of making the best use of our life. And we went through the first factors that there were the individual ones, and we count some of them. And in this part, we are going to the second factor, and they are the social factors, the individual ones, and the others around us. Okay, so these factors are the following. I count them now. So, long idle meeting. It's very important to stop and refrain from idle meetings because in this case we should watch our social connections and see what we gain from it. So if we see our social connections are harming us, we should refrain from it. But if we see that we are reasonably benefiting from the social connections, we have to and we must make the best use of them. Also, unreasonable requests from others. We should refrain from requesting unreasonable requests from others because in this case, we belittle ourselves and we humiliate ourselves. And that's makes us to believe we are nothing. And in this case, it awakens us to step forward, to make the further steps to achieving our goals. So at the end, I would like to finish this part with a saying that we should be aware of these things that deprive us of our time and ease. And we should not engage in these behaviors. On the other hand, we should read the life stories of the great and successful people if we are looking for a successful life. And we will learn how to make use of our time, how to build our time and future. And then we will make our family and other people proud of us. The thing more important than all that is that you and we will please Allah. and he will please us. When we met him lonely, and then he will grant us the eternal bliss. This is the right way, and all else is loss and torment.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Massive cyber attacks have disrupted important sites within the Israeli regime and affected banks, companies, and the special alarm system in the occupied Palestinian territories. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of Shafaqna has covered this story and tells us more. A massive cyber attack by a group of Sudanese hackers has knocked offline the website of a major airport as well as the largest supplier of electrical power in the Israeli-occupied territories, amid rising cyber operations targeting the Israeli regime's companies and facilities. The Hebrew-language media outlets reported that a hacker group calling itself Anonymous Sudan, took down the websites of Ben-Gurion International Airport and Israel Electric Corporation on Saturday, 22nd of April. The reports added that the distributed denial-of-service attacks, during which websites are targeted by overwhelming their servers with too many requests to connect, made the websites unavailable for a while before they were brought back into service. The group wrote on its Telegram channel, "We have not forgotten our Eid al-Fitr gift for Israel. There will be major cyber attack and it will bring down a large part of infrastructure in occupied Palestine. We will attack at any moment." Recently, an Indonesian hacker group carried out a massive cyber attack against a number of Israeli websites, including those of the Ministries of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Health. The Jerusalem Post wrote that the group, calling itself Wolves Sec Team, announced on 17th of April that it had managed to break into the websites of the Israeli Education Ministry, Health Ministry, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, as well as the Israeli police and bus and train companies in recent days, and had been successful in taking the websites down. The developments come only a few days after the pro-Palestinian hackers knocked offline the websites of dozens of prominent Israeli companies and institutions in a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people on the occasion of International Quds Day. Also, the Israeli media reported that hackers brought down at least 60 Israeli websites within 48 hours, and the cyber attacks, which took place on an unprecedented scale, caused widespread disruption across the occupied Palestinian territories. The reports added that apart from Israeli banks which came under cyber attacks on International Quds Day, the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, the websites of International Ride-Hailing Service, Yango, and the Private College of Law and Business in Ramat Gan were also among those affected. The national website has also covered this story and tells us more. A group of hackers has claimed responsibility for a cyber attack that they say was the reason behind major power failure in several cities across Israeli-occupied territories on Thursday, 27th of April. The anonymous Sudan hacker group, which has waged several cyber attacks against various Israeli websites in the past few weeks, announced on Thursday, 27th of April, it was responsible for the recent power outages in the occupied Israeli territories. In a post on its Telegram channel, the group said that the electric attack was just for fun. We'll show you more. It also warned of more attacks to come. Israel, we are still playing with you. Soon you will be without the internet. We are working to down the internet in the occupied Palestine like electricity. The power cuts caused traffic jams in Tel Aviv, while also affecting the Knesset and government ministries. Meanwhile, Israel's electric company claimed that a malfunction at a Haifa power plant had caused the power outage. This is while various Israeli institutions have been targeted with increasing cyber attacks lately, part of which was carried out by the named Sudanese hacker group. The group claimed recently to have hacked Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's website, though it may have been referring to his official page. According to Israeli media, Netanyahu's webpage was filled after the cyber attack with verses of the Holy Quran and a clip containing text in Bengali language. Also, an Israeli radio station and a software company have come under cyber attack by unidentified hacker groups. Israeli media reported on Sunday, 30th of April, that the attack targeted the Hebrew language radio 103 FM and the website of Checkpoint Software Technologies Limited, an American-Israeli multinational company which provides software and combined hardware and software products for cybersecurity. The attack came a day after the website of Israel's aerospace industries, Israel weapon industries, and Israeli firearms manufacturer Rafael Advanced Defense Systems Limited and Evigilo Limited, which develops and delivers emergency mass notification and alert multi-channel solutions, were all hacked. The power outages caused traffic jams in Tel Aviv, while also affecting the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, and the regime's ministries. Another hacker group, known as Sharp Boys, said recently it had targeted the Atid institutions, stealing the data of 500,000 users. The hacker group further claimed it had obtained the personal information of Israelis, including identification documents of people who served in the Israeli military. The website of Press TV has also covered this issue and tells us more. Several Israeli websites, including those of two major ports in the occupied Palestinian territories, have been taken down by a hacker group only a day after one of the regime's radio stations and a software company were targeted by unidentified hackers. According to Israeli media outlets, the hacker group, calling itself Anonymous Sudan, has claimed responsibility for the new attack on Israeli websites, including those of Haifa and Jaffa ports, on Monday, 1st of May. Israeli media said the technique used was apparently the distributed denial of service, during which websites are targeted by overwhelming their servers with too many requests to connect. This came after Israeli outlets reported on Sunday that an attack had targeted the regime's Radio 103 FM station and the website of Checkpoint Software Technologies Limited, an American-Israeli multinational firm which provides software and combined hardware and software products for cybersecurity industry. Also, a hacker group has carried out a cyber attack against an Israeli institution, stealing the data of 500,000 users, the latest in a series of cyber operations across the occupied Palestinian territories. Hebrew-language media outlets reported that a group known as Sharp Boys has targeted the Atid institution recently and put the stolen information on sale after publishing part of it, including a file containing 200,000 names, identification numbers, and addresses of students. The hacker group further claimed that it had obtained the personal information of Israelis, including identification documents of people who have served in the Israeli military. Atid is an Israeli institution that includes several vocational training and four engineering colleges in the occupied city of Al-Quds. Since its founding in 1990, Atid has trained hundreds of thousands of individuals to be elected as officials of the occupying Israeli regime.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with a number of poets and experts in Persian literature in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on Wednesday, April 5, 2023. The meeting took place on the eve of the auspicious birth anniversary of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Here, in the streets of Tehran, our most virtuous youth, like the ones whose names were mentioned, such as Arman Ali Verdi and Ruhullah Ajamian, they were truly some of our purest, most untainted, most virtuous youth, were tortured to death. But the Western world did not object at all. I mean, it didn't matter to them. Rather, they provoked people and trained them to do these things. Their radio stations and their agents teach these kinds of things. These are examples of their human rights. All of us must know the enemy today. Everyone should know the points the enemy uses as targets for its attacks. Everyone should know the strategies employed by the enemies. Everyone should know where the enemy is positioned. Just like in a military warfare is the same. If you don't know where the enemy is going to attack from, you will be deceived. If you don't know which area they plan on occupying, and if they succeed in tricking you, you will be deceived. You need to know these things. It is the same in soft warfare.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Unity You must know what the enemy wants to do, where their target is, what their goals are, and what their strategies are. Everyone should know these and fight against these, especially the artistic and cultural circles. Poets, artists, novelists, cinematographers, architects, and those involved in various cultural fields should know that we are currently facing this plundering and onslaught of the enemy. They should pay attention to this. They need to understand what is happening. And they must also show what's happening to other people. They need to raise awareness about this. And they shouldn't be passive. Fortunately, we have a number of good poets today who are pious, kind-hearted, and believers in the religion and the revolution. Well, you are all examples of this. Fortunately, one of the good things that has been done by various organizations, those that are active in the field of art and also other organizations, is that they have helped to expand this kind of work throughout the country. Today, the opportunity exists for poets from all over the country, even those from villages and small towns, to introduce themselves and to go to centers where they can present their poetry.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The members of the Pakistani parliament are insisting the coalition government to eliminate obstacles in starting the oil trade with neighboring Iran to overcome the country's energy deficiency. MPs' voices were heard during the recent meetings of the parliamentary committees, in which lawmakers stressed upon the government officials to robust diplomacy for aggressively pursuing options to secure waivers on the oil trade with Iran.
We get 1 million liters of diesel from Iran every day. It's called so-called smuggling. And it's, I think, 50 rupees per liter as compared to here. We should open this up. The region has to open up.
The lawmakers recommended that all-out efforts should be made to secure waivers from sanctions on oil trade with Iran.
I've been saying to the government also that we should open up these borders. Because, like, for the first time, Iran-Afghanistan trade is more than Pakistan-Afghanistan trade. And I think if they can have it, and it's benefiting both countries, so this trade would be very good for us also.
According to the data provided by Pakistan's Commerce Ministry to the Parliament, Pakistan's trade with Iran has crossed over $2 billion, covering food, medicines, cotton, and pharmaceutical products.
This is a huge project. We are engaged in talks with Pakistani authorities over this issue, and both countries will manage to come up with a positive solution very soon.
Like the rest of the world, Pakistan is no exception to the global energy crisis, which is worsening with each passing day. Experts say Islamabad plans to buy oil and gas from Iran, but wants to do in such a way that it escapes sanctions from the US and other Western countries.
Although the bilateral trade between Iran and Pakistan has now reached over $2 billion, however, both sides believe that more efforts should be made to strengthen the trade relations further and to support the business community of the two countries. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Turkish Defense Minister Hulusi Akar said there are positive signs that Turkey and Syria could be close to reaching an agreement that would facilitate the return of 3.6 million Syrian refugees to home. Akar talked about